So, there are copies, there are quite a few copies over here of where we are currently with our discussions to amend the Chapter 101 floodplain management. We are working off of a FEMA recommendation. It's about 31 pages long. And we have gotten through it through to section 7. And why don't we start by looking at a couple of maps that Mike Karaskevich and his office prepared.
What I have is a three aerial photos. They're overlays of the town. The first one is a map shown. Well, I can start. We have a map with the effective zones overlaid on the town. You're going to have to focus in, because unfortunately this is how it is. And then the second map is a map showing the preliminary flood zones. And then
So let's go back to the...
The third one is a map showing the preliminary and the effective zones.
Okay.
And we also have topography on there from Sussex County.
So the...
So you can pick out this one.
I thought that this would be instructive when we talk about Freeboard in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you want to come up here, the public's welcome to come up here too. This is the effective...
Yeah, and these maps have a lot of detail, so if you want me to help you interpret when we get to it.
I think one of the kind of relevant features is that on the bay, this area here is an AE zone.
AE7.
So it's an AE7. And you can see that and this is the boundary of Dewey Beach. So you can see that we have
the yellows are legend. Yellow line is the effective line, and this red line.
So there are a few properties here. There's a few properties here. This is North Beach and Venus. This is
Cajun Cove.
And then there's this. This must be Reed Street, and this is a Brule compound, and then there's some businesses up here, and then this is the VE. This is a VE, a high velocity wave action. This is a VE12 up here, and you can see that in fact there are a number of properties mm-hmm. along the ocean side that are in a VE zone. They were so this map was, this is a 94?
I believe it was 94.
Mm-hmm. So that was before the dune replenishments, the beach replenishments.
And it was also an AO2 zone.
And this...
Which is a big part of the town.
Which is from runoff. So, you get a heavy rains, or you get a breach of the dunes.
Sheet flow. Then a good part of the northern part of the town, except for sections along the lake.
And this is an AE zone. AE8, I think.
Well, it was, right?
I mean, it was. Well, it is.
This is AE right here, but this is these guys are out.
Right.
Right. Okay, right. So it comes in like this and so forth.
This yellow line is the dividing line.
Yeah.
And that sign is AE. Everything on this side is X until you come down to this yellow line.
Okay, so that's an AE, this is part of the 500-year floodplain.
Yeah, well, this is an area. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what does that mean?
That means it's out of the 100-year zone. No flood insurance is required.
Gotcha.
Okay, so this is now the
preliminary.
The preliminary, and there's no reason to assume that this is not going to become fact in March of 2015. This zone here, which was an AE zone before, is now becoming a VE zone. So it's gone from an AE to a VE, and so there's a couple of properties, not many, but there are, so these are commercial, One, two, three, four. I don't know how many are there, but part of the Brule property is, but not the house in question, I guess.
So they went from an A to a V.
They went from an A to a V.
That's the Lions here, right?
That is the Lions Club. North Beach, Ivy.
Up to the marina.
Up to the marina.
Chucky monkey dog.
Now, on the ocean side, what we see is that the DE zone, the DE line has actually moved. There are very few structures.
Interesting.
Currently in the VE zone, there is
the townhouses.
The set of townhouses that have always stuck out at the end of. So this is Reed.
This is the surf club.
That's the surf club, which is a little bit, and then there are a couple of. Well, actually, it looks like most of the oceanfront properties.
No, this is still VE. Just
that's
a VE
10. So it looks like you know, most of these properties down here are also in a VE zone.
Mm-hmm. Same thing going down. Yeah.
So then there are other subtle things. So we have an AE6. This used to be AE7 in here, 6, 5. And this is still an AO2.
They brought an AE zone down into this street.
No, they recognize the fact that this always gets a lot of flooding. It brought it up and down. And part of the change here is this is based on better topography. The difference between the AO zone here and the AE zones here used to be Route 1. They just, you know, because they had 2 foot topograph. Or ISO, what do they call them? ISO? No, ISO something. Elevation.
This has both zones, and the preliminary one is I'm going to call it the purple line. And the yellow one is the effective line, so you can see where the AO zone used to go down the highway, just like that, but now they followed the contours and created different areas.
Now, what I'd hoped that we were going to be able to get Mike's engineers to do was to kind of color code this.
These are spot grids. Where you see these numbers, two. So we started color coding it, Dave, but it got too busy, and I didn't think we would have been able to follow it.
VE, I think it.
Well, this, right, but what I was looking for is that.
What does the spot mean?
Elevation.
That's the elevation
two. Elevation two, okay.
Based upon Sussex County's topography. So, in other words, if that's elevation two, and they're saying the VE zone would be elevation seven, or AE zone. The VE is going to be 7, then
five
more feet.
Gotcha.
So what I wanted to try and visualize, and it's harder for me looking at this, and I'm sure it's hard for all of you, is what is the net effect for individual property owners going from the current to the future? And to some extent, this zone was an AE7 and is now an AE6. And parts of this area, and this was an AE6 and is going to go to an AE5. And then over, right? But it used to be AE6.
And the lower number means increased risk of flooding?
No, I'm sorry. The number is what the 100-year flood elevation is expected to be.
That 5 is an
so
elevation.
The 5 is an elevation above.
As in 5 feet.
Above mean sea level.
Okay.
Yep. So if you were in a 6 and you're now in a 5 with the same letter designation, means you're actuarially safer
right.
From being flooded.
Gotcha.
Okay, so
that's an interesting.
You know, it kind of went from 7 to 6, 6 to 5, 6 to 6, and then when you cross over here, you kind of are going from what was an AO2, which isn't based. The 2 is not based on sea level, but it's based on the ground. So the ground is 6, you were at an AO of 2. So that would put put you at 8 feet in terms of sea level elevation.
Mm.
But this is now an AE6. So you've gone down 2 feet in terms of risk. And I think that's important.
2 feet closer to the sea level.
Well, they used to say sheet, I mean, it used to be sheet flow, and you had to build to an elevation of 8 feet.
I see.
2 feet above ground, ground 6 feet, 6 and 2 is 8.
Wow.
Now it's rising water levels from the bay, and it's 6 feet. You're in an AE6. Isn't this an AE6 zone?
This is still all AO2 in here.
Okay, but this is in, this is the AE6.
This line will be the AE6.
In fact, they're in a lower area than are considered lower. Am I getting that right or wrong?
Well, so your point is that there really are not many structures in this area. Well, here's some down here.
You mean not a lot? There are a lot of structures there.
You know, so they went from being in an AO2 where the ground level was 6 feet, so that means they have to build to an 8 foot standard.
Well, now not including your freeboard.
So you not including the freeboard, you're right. I'm sorry. None of what I've said is included the freeboard.
They went from an AO2 to what?
To an AE6.
Some small areas of the town.
As you can see,
it mostly follows the streets itself.
So they're saying, you know, actuarially you're 2 feet better off.
What's it on Sweet Street where we are?
Sweet Street is all AO.
You're doomed.
I don't want to know, because then I...
except for the oceanfront buildings... Everything east of the highway is an AO2 zone.
Yeah. Marty, you're in a VE12.
Then as you get down, and even most of the west side is an AO2. Part of it ends up being in an AE6.
Somehow you're
going
to have to make it easy for people.
Yeah, this is
right. Better or worse.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I hear you on that.
But this is good because it, you know, I'm going to work with Mike, I think, to see if I can get a clearer graphic. But in parts of the town, the change in the FEMA flood insurance risk maps, rate maps, flood insurance rate maps, are in the direction that the level of the 100-year flood or the requirements on a large number of properties in town has actually decreased a foot.
Well, there you go, no global warming.
Well, it's counterintuitive to some
of what we're seeing.
Right.
Some of this has to do with better topography. So they're doing better jobs.
Those are those trucks driving around with the GPS and whatever.
Well, they actually shoot LIDAR from the satellites, so they have better lasers.
So some of these are being de-risked in these new ratings.
Right.
When does that ripple through to the field?
Well,
this is the new line, the purple.
Yeah.
So that goes, just trying to find the problem line. Where does it go?
Presumably in March. Or April of 2015.
Yeah, I'll keep them going around.
These will become active, and your rates will all be adjusted accordingly. Then there's a big Waters Act of 2012, which says that you're not going to be grandfathered anymore. And Dale will still be grandfathered. If it's your permanent residence, you continue to be grandfathered for a while. I don't know if it's forever or for a while, but if you're not, then you have to be brought up to actuarial standards over a period of 4 or 5 years. But in terms of our discussion for freeboard, I was looking at these, and it seems like a lot of properties are to some extent being de-risked. And so if we increase the freeboard by a foot, anticipating sea level to rise a foot between now and the next time we want to come back and do this, that would be making them safer. And this whole question of, do we need to increase the height commensurate with decreasing the freeboard? I think the answer is, for many people, no. because the FEMA required level is going down a foot. So if we add a foot to the freeboard, we're kind of keeping them neutral, right, rather than having them built to a standard that in 30 years is, you know, going to put them in this guy's position where he wants to elevate again so he can get better flood insurance rates or be safer or something. Right, Kevin?
Correct.
So that's what these maps are about.
So depending on which zone you're in might dictate whether you stay, you don't do anything with the 35 feet versus when you consider the freeboards. Or you do something about that.
Right.
Depending on which flood zone.
Right. Now, we have spent a lot of time talking about increasing freeboard and increasing height as two things that are interrelated.
Maybe interrelated.
What I want our discussion today to focus on is we, the town, is not going to increase the 35-foot height limit anytime soon.
What, I missed that. What do you mean?
Well, I mean, it would take a
referendum
vote.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And so, you know, it's going to take a while to get a referendum vote, and it needs a supermajority or maybe a unanimous vote by the town commissioners. And so, you know, we're kind of looking at ain't going to happen before, you know, 2016 sometime. But we need to send something to FEMA in the next couple of months. And so whatever our recommendation is going to have to be based on current height restrictions. If people need a relief from the Board of Adjustment, then they can go to the Board of Adjustment still. I mean, I would ultimately like to get this by right in the code. That's something we're going to work on after we get the freeboard done. I've got a timeline I'll pass out to people at the end of this discussion on how I see things folding in the next 6 months, but height is one of the issues I'd like to resolve in the next 6 months. But today we're going to discuss what we want to do with our recommendation on freeboard. So section 7, which is page 31, and if there are questions from the public at any point in time, just let me know.
I did have a question.
Dale.
You may not, because of the change in the map and the additional ability they have to really place specific buildings in proper level, and using a colloquial term, not a technical term, and the fact that you're only talking about raising the freeboard possibly one, you may not have to worry about the height, overall height of the building, 35 feet at all, right?
Might be true. I think that statement would be true for many buildings, but maybe not all buildings.
I guess the question, following up what Dale said, if your house is already at the 35-foot level and you had to raise it to meet the flood level plus freeboard, that would be a dilemma for somebody.
Yeah, but you can't. The question I had was that, you know, from what I see, they're giving us, again, in layman's terms, they're giving us a little better shot at the level.
Right.
They're in show.
Well, it depends on which zone you're in.
Yeah.
Okay. That's why each of the zones is different.
There are a few houses that are actually hurt.
Yeah.
There are a couple of houses that have gone from AE7 to VE7, which basically has raised their risk by approximately.
The elevation stays the same. The risk factor is the wave factor now. They're considering what used to be just a flood coming in an AE zone. They're saying now, and Chuck will answer this, I'm going to ask him something. What they're saying now is that along the Rehoboth Bay, there's a wave damage factor. That's what they're saying now. What is, you know, you've seen all the storms there are that are down there. What do you think about waves down there? I mean, the height of waves and the effect of.
Well, if you get the wind out of the southwest, they can be tremendous.
Yeah, high waves.
Dorn Sandy, yeah, on Rehoboth Bay, we had 4.5 o'clock of waves, and they decimated us.
Yeah. That's what FEMA is saying now. Before, along the bay, it was AE7, you didn't consider the wave factor, but now they're saying, yeah, we have to consider it, and you confirmed that.
Yeah, it comes from the northwest, northeast, not as bad as far as our end of the bay, but if it comes from the southwest, then it's going to be tremendous.
So they've now recognized that there's a wave damage issue.
And we certainly saw that in Sandy. Okay, so section 7, page 31. I have some issues. If we're going to go through, and if anybody else has questions, comments, additions, modifications, then Paul or Paige. So the bottom of page 31, rolling on to page 32, section 7.1, variances. The question before us is whether to vest the authority in granting a variance to the Board of Adjustment or some other body. That's one question. And the second is if we choose the Board of Adjustment, do we want to write in a requirement that part of the pathway through the Board of Adjustment is to come to the Planning Commission for a review and recommendation? And I think, Mike, that was your thinking earlier on that,
it is. I think any Planning Commission's responsibility is to review applications, site plans, documents, and whatever, and compare it to the town code and pertinent information and make their recommendation on that. That's how I think it should continue. They should submit applications to the town, come to the Planning Commission with required information to fully understand what they're doing and review it, and then make a recommendation. If we disapprove it, then I believe it should go to the Board of Adjustment for their ruling.
But even if we approve it, it still should go to the Board of Adjustment because we can't grant a variance. They would be looking for a variance, and our recommendation would be
so we would add another
to recommend.
Step for
so we would add another
right.
step.
Right. Regardless.
Regardless.
Regardless, we'd come to us and then go to the Board of Adjustment.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a belt and suspenders concept here. You're adding another element of what you might call safety or review, but you know, I recognize that that this body here has more sophistication in terms of planning, in terms of the sort of historic context, which would be valuable to the Board of Adjustments. And in some sense, by putting that in there, we're obligating this Planning Commission to do that work, which is more work, which is. We all signed up for more work, so that's.
But it's also in keeping with the changes that we're working on in administrative processes in general. It's kind of moving the town into a more professional,
more sophisticated. Yeah, I think it's in the direction.
Yeah, I just don't know of any area where practice where Planning Commission can make grant a variance. You know, if you meet or don't meet the requirement. You know, they make recommendations, and then whoever goes to next can listen to their recommendations. But if they do not meet the requirements, say they send a plan in, and then and we say it's a 2-foot freeboard. The regulations say it's a 2-foot freeboard, and they send a plan in saying, well, we're only going to build a 1-foot freeboard. Well, we have to review why they definitely need a variance. But we have to review why and look at the documents they send in and then make our recommendation to the Board of Adjustment whether we think they should give them a variance or not.
Right, and that kind of the process or position of the Planning Commission is similar to your experience in some of the upper counties and some of the municipalities in Delaware. So,
not only Delaware, most
Maryland, Pennsylvania. Yeah. So I, you know, it's a direction into I think a little more sophisticated process.
Right.
Georgia? I just had one question. I just wanted to confirm the variances we're speaking about having planning commission review of are only those relating to flood damage reduction and flood damage?
They are only the ones in, yeah, correct. In it's variances from the requirements of this chapter.
Okay. So we're not talking all the variances.
I think ultimately we will talk about all the variances, but not...
Not right now.
Not right now.
That's not what we're talking about now. Okay, thank you.
So what I would like to do is to amend this section to say, to define the Board of Adjustment as the body that is authorized to issue variances. To say that the, to add a phrase that says the authority vested in the Dewey Beach Board of Adjustment and General Administrative Procedures are incorporated in Article 10 of Chapter 185, Zoning of the Town Code. We're different. The regulations and requirements of this chapter, being the flood loss reduction chapter, supersede town code, supersede supersede and or augment those of chapter 185. So FEMA's requirements in other language in other places is that if there's any conflict between the flood loss reduction and any other part of town code, this trumps clearly. So this both points to where the Board of Adjustment has the authority to issue a variance and its procedures, and that if there's a difference, that it trumps here. To change where it says, to clarify where it says, everywhere for which a variance is sought, to say for where a variance from the requirements of this chapter are sought, to make it clear that we're talking about this chapter. Mm-hmm. And then to add under B, prior to consideration by the Board of Adjustment, the Planning Commission shall review applications for variances from the requirements of this chapter and prepare a recommendation based on the factors in this section and the limitations of section 7.1C. And prepare a recommendation to the Board of Adjustment based on the factors in the section and limitations in section C. And then on the next paragraph, to add where it says in considering variance applications, the Board of in considering applications for variance from the requirements of this chapter, the Board of Adjustment shall consider and make findings of fact on the Planning Commission recommendation and then the other issues raised there. So this puts the Planning Commission in, it makes it clear here and elsewhere in the section that we're only talking about variances from the requirements of this chapter. We all okay with that?
Yeah. Now, can we just, as the last meeting, we discussed the authority the Board of Adjustment has. Are we still providing a list of factors that the Board of Adjustment would have to consider?
Yes.
We are still doing it?
That's part of the FEMA.
Okay.
It seems to me that that'd be under B and C. Those are the factors that they have to consider.
Well, I'm not arguing, but didn't we discuss at the last meeting that that would possibly infringe on their rules and regulations as to what they can consider?
I think that this is the minimum that FEMA wants them to consider. They can consider other stuff.
Okay.
But they must consider this. Okay. So I don't think we're infringing. And this doesn't say they can't.
Point. I think you got a good point there. See, this really dealt with whoever the flood administrator was, the floodplain administrator. This section, that's what was designed to. So technically, you could say it could be Bill Mears as the building inspector. So that person would have the ability to make these adjustments. We're throwing in now the Board of Adjustment, so that may throw a wrinkle. I think that has to be looked at. That are we limiting or putting some constraints on what their ability might be for hardships?
I'm sorry, this may not
fit within their requirements, all this criteria.
Well, it
may or may not.
I read this as saying that they need to consider, we're adding the Planning Commission recommendation, all evaluations, all relevant factors, requirements specified in other sections of these regulations, and the following sections. We're saying, you know, they have to do their due diligence on hardship. This does say that they cannot consider convenience or cost the hardship, but our code says that already.
For Board of Adjustment
hearings? Board of Adjustment hearings. And, you know, this is, you know, what it adds is, for example, the danger that materials may be swept onto lands, other lands, or injure other people. Well, that's...
I don't have a problem with it at all, David. I'm just saying that before we make a recommendation, I would like to recommend that we send this over to them to look at.
I'm willing to do that, but the last time round, we decided we didn't want to do that.
Well, I'm not sure that... We're making a recommendation to a body that has no clue what we're doing.
Would you send that to the chairman?
Yes.
Okay.
The chairman. And so at least they're aware where we're at. Because if they've got a problem with it, wouldn't it be better for us to deal with it here at this planning level versus being trumped at the board before the commissioners?
The only thing we'd hear from them is that the chairman...
Just to get your comments, this is what we're recommending.
Yeah, he'd come back and say, well, he doesn't think this makes any sense, or maybe this ought to be changed. Right. But it would just be his personal point of view. It would not be a Board of Adjustment point of view.
I don't know. It could be a Board of Adjustment point of view, too. Because my sense is we're making recommendations.
And vote on it. I mean, they have to meet and have a public meeting and vote on it.
They may have to.
They wouldn't do that unless there's a... I don't know.
Why would you want to blindside these people?
Well, I agree with you. Maybe we ought to make sure that the chairman knows what we're doing. I would agree with that point.
My work plan on this document is that at our next meeting, we have a final draft that we are ready to vote on. So I'm not looking for a vote today. And we can send the updated draft, whatever comes out of this meeting, to the chairman of the Board of Adjustment see how he would like to deal with that issue.
And with a 20-word description saying that the planning commissioners have considered these changes
that impact the
Board of Adjustment. Yeah.
You know, please have considered these factors to be something to be pertinent to a variance. Or
right.
The next Board of Adjustment meeting is on September 30th. To let you know that.
Thank you.
Well, they've got another.
I'm sure they have plenty on their table at this point.
Yeah, they've got a full meeting, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, they have the decision scheduled in the one case, but if they had an opportunity to review these materials before then, I know you're on the Board of Adjustment, but if they had an opportunity to review the materials before then, they may be able to address it at that time.
Good, thank you.
Who's
okay.
Okay. Nobody.
Oh, no, you know, that's right. I'm sorry.
You've been fired.
I apologize.
Okay. So we will we will send this for review to the Board of Adjustment.
Yeah, that's all. And maybe give them a little deadline to respond back.
Okay. So I'm now at the bottom of page 33. If anybody has something before them that they would like to discuss.
Well, I just have a couple. We had talked at the last meeting inserting a few words, terms in some of these areas. Back on page 16.
Oh, okay. So
are we finished with this then?
Well, he said any comments.
33.
Well, I was the, from. Let's go through section 7, then go back through the rest of the.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Section 7. I'm back to section 7.
On page 32 or page 33. I would like to add at the bottom of that, the bottom of the page, item 2, to add at the end of that section, examples of such conditions that may be imposed by the Board of Adjustment in granting a variance to the conditions of this chapter are listed in section 185-69. This says, I mean, the section says the Board of Adjustment can impose limitations. And it doesn't go on to say what the kinds of limitations are. We have a section of our code that has limitations that the Board of Adjustment may impose on granting a variance. And I
what section was that?
Think 185-69. That it's just good housekeeping to point.
Refer, point them in that direction.
You know, point to where it is if it is. My next comments are on the middle of page 34. Anybody have anything before then?
34 is my 34.
This is section 8, which is enforcement.
Okay, that's my page 3.
Okay. Under 8.1C, at the end of that, so this has to do with compliance and permits being issued. To add to the last sentence, use arrangement, so it says use arrangement or construction of such specific activities that is contrary to that authorized shall be deemed a violation of these regulations. And then add, and shall be punishable as a civil offense.
My only comment was the $25 seemed low.
In accordance with section 8. I have 8.3.
8.3 is violations and penalties.
Right.
$25, you're right.
And then under 8.2, to point to Article 2, Chapter 80, Civil Offenses. Article 2 is the issuance of citations and remedies in Chapter 80, which is civil offenses. And 8.3 to reference to a new section, Chapter 80, Section 14. So right now, there are only 13 sections in Chapter 80. Which is civil offenses. And, you know, so they are related to specific things, like, you know, no dog license, you know, parking.
There would have to be another ordinance, I believe.
So we would need to do a draft ordinance that would create
a civil offense.
Okay.
The penalties.
You'd have to specify that in order that we're going to have an offense for this.
Right. And we don't want to put it in here, per se, because the only way you can change anything in here is to go to FEMA.
Got it. So you just want to refer to the section, and then we can.
And then we can change it,
right,
as seems appropriate, you know, to gear to inflation, if nothing else.
Right.
Well, there are limitations on civil offenses, and I think our code calls for a $500 maximum for the first offense.
Right. So the question is, I mean, yes, the code currently says if you violate the floodplain management code, it's a $25. Fine, which, you know, is, you know, who would want to obey the code?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, here.
Here, take it.
Pay an architect and an engineer $1,000, pay you $25.
Right, exactly.
So the first penalty maximum for the first offense can be $500.
That sounds good.
Well, it's consistent with our civil code. So, and then the second is 1,000, and it can get pretty bad.
Now, in some places, the code says every day that the offense is not rectified as a new offense. So it would be $500 a day until the issue is rectified. But I think that's a gray area, because if I, you know, so I get cited for this, and then I apply for a Board of Adjustment hearing.
30-40 days go by.
You know,
yeah, I don't think we're looking.
60 days go by, and the Board of Adjustment says fine. Well, then am I six? Do I owe the town $30,000, or do I owe the town nothing? And yeah. And so.
Well, I would assume that if you get cited and you apply, everything stops when you turn in your application to the Board of Adjustment. That's a position the town has always taken. We cease and desist till the Board of Adjustment.
You can continue working. You just do it at risk.
Oh, you? No, I'm just saying for the fines itself.
Oh, for the fines.
Stops taking.
Yeah.
So
it's sort of like filing an appeal. And it would also occur if they choose to go to Chancery Court.
So just do $500 a day is the...
I don't really have a strong opinion, David. I'm thinking $500 for the fine and a requirement for correction. You know, that would be strong, but $500 a day might get really, really harsh real quick for somebody.
Well, so what do you do? I mean, you know...
I think incumbent upon whoever is issuing the citation, and I would assume it would be probably the building official at this point as a floodplain administrator. That's done on a case-by-case basis. It's not automatic that you just continue hitting somebody.
I mean, could
you correct
you...
it? And then how do you correct? It may take you a month to correct it, so you're going to hit him with $15,000.
So could you revoke a certificate of occupancy or a business license?
You can do all kinds of stuff.
You don't get a CO until it's settled.
You really don't want to go into the penalties too much as far as taking discretion from the. You don't want to mandate the town that they're stuck, they got to do this. Each case should be looked at individually. I think the first offense of $500, if you cite it, you start from there. And then, at that point, you end up with discussions.
Or $500 and some language it says, and proof is moving forward towards correction. Action towards correction.
Yeah, I've been involved, and I've seen situations where people will build something without a permit, and they get caught. Okay, they are cited right then and there that you are in violation, and the terms or the terms afterwards will be something like this: you have 30 days, 15 days, whatever, to make application to correct your violation. And then they had that period of time to hire an engineer or a surveyor or a lawyer or whatever to come in and make the correct application to the town. Right. Then the town has so many days to review it and approve or disapprove it. Okay. And then after the approval process, they have so many days to correct it. You have to give them a limitation. You just can't stretch out for a year or two. They come down, you know, weekends and fix it.
Exactly.
And after that correction period, then the $500 a day thing steps in.
So can you get us some draft language in the next week or so on that?
I mean, that's how I've seen it done, and that seems to be fair.
That seems reasonable.
Some people build things, they know they didn't get a permit, and they get caught.
Right.
Some people build things they don't really. I think I've heard a lot of cases now. Contractors coming and telling the people, "Yeah, I'm a licensed contractor. I've got your permit. Everything's fine today." And they go ahead and build a deck, and then you know the code enforcement officer comes around, sees where's your building permit, knock on the door. My contractor has it. Where's your contractor? He's gone. So they're stuck with this problem. So you know that gives them the reasonable time to correct it, and within after the reasonable time, if they don't correct it, then it's their problem.
Okay, so we okay with, we'll get some language drafted. This will point towards that, and that's on a, you know, finalizing that language is on a different pathway. And in section 3 on this page, I still need to delegate to Jim to scrub through all of the other parts of the code that need to be repealed. when this gets enacted, if there are any other parts of the code that need to be enacted. So that gets us for the first reading through this, if you are all okay with all of that.
I think, Mike, were you going back to page 16? We were talking about item 13. I don't know if we needed some more clarifications in there. It sounds like the wording that you put in there that said, where appropriate certifications and or technical analysis prepared, these documents may be required. My only comment was, do you guys think that we're being clear enough on page 16 there that's saying that we only need these where it's applicable? And I think it's pretty clear myself. I just want to make sure you think
right,
so.
But I think we need to flesh out what A, B, C, and D are. What does ENS plans
okay.
mean?
Well, and if it was like
you and Mike were going to give us.
That's right, we never did.
And you never did.
Okay, so can we do that for the next meeting? Because I was thinking about that.
Within the next week, get me language, and okay. I'll insert it in here for the final draft that we'll review in the next meeting.
All right, so
these are your points, so yeah, you can take the lead.
I got it. So I was thinking, I knew there was an action, and I lost in the shuffle there in the summer. So okay, I got it. Owe you an email in a week.
Okay. So let's go back to page one, and there are two issues that I have between here, and we'll just go through page, not on page one, but does anybody have an issue?
Are you on page five, Amy?
On page, between page one and page five.
Mike, can you pass me one of those other ordinances? I marked mine up to a point on that. Thank you.
Yep.
So are there?
Yes, I just need a couple. I'm missing a couple. There they are.
So, anybody have any anything you want to discuss between page one and page five?
Nothing.
Page six, just holler. Page seven, eight.
Go down just a little bit. I can't pick up my pages. The one I marked up doesn't have the. I think my first one comes up around.
So I'm now on page 11. Anybody with something earlier?
You said
it's a little later on.
Okay. So the top of page 11 is substantial damage. And so the FEMA's draft language says damage of any origin sustained by a structure whereby the cost of restoring the structure to its before damage condition would equal or exceed 50% of the market value of the structure before the damage occurred. And then it points to a FEMA document. That was the recommended language from the FEMA contractor.
You did some work on that, or you drew our attention to that section. So a quick question on that one is, so if it's 50% of market value, how do we determine the market value of that?
You use this FEMA P758.
Yeah, right. What we exactly? I suggested that we insert in there that
we need something there.
That you have to follow the FEMA bulletin, and I think that is the FEMA bulletin.
That is the FEMA bulletin.
So he's,
I mean,
basically it's.
So Rebecca Quinn, the FEMA contractor, looked at our proposed language and came back with that as the
okay.
The recommendation.
The question is, I looked at it once when you sent it out to us, and would it require somebody to get an assessment of their property?
Possibly.
Yes, you do. Yeah, these have present market value. This is the more worksheet right here.
Present market value is
the FEMA worksheet.
Yeah, well, this is the one that's in the guidance document. And it says you have to have the ratio. Part of the formula is the cost of improvement divided by the present market value. That's why I say appraisal. So I don't know if you
you may not need an appraisal if you go to a realtor and ask them what's the market value in that area.
No, FEMA has minimum guidelines that they are open to situations where it could be a hardship to bring an appraiser in, but you can't just bring a realtor in or your contractor who says, this is what it's worth. They have some minimum guidelines you have to follow. Mm-hmm. It could even come down to looking at tax records or you just can't throw a number out there based upon a realtor or a contractor.
You sure don't want to look at our tax records. There's nothing.
Well, that's why I said it's important to insert in there the FEMA bulletin that gives you the specific requirements to meet this code.
So if we're passing this, and we should be attaching that FEMA bulletin to this document so people know what
I don't know if we have to attach it, but
I don't think it says FEMA.
They have some guidance in estimating market value. It says something, the methods include tax assessments, comma, actual cash value, and qualified estimates based on sound professional judgment by the staff of the community's building or tax assessor's office, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. There's guidance.
There's guidance.
Yeah.
And that there, I mean, they do recommend that there are different.
My point one being, if we're going to send this to the commissioners to adopt, we need to have that available so they look at it.
Yeah.
Okay. That's
well, you can't waver from that, do you, Jim?
Gotcha. I'm not looking for a waiver. I'm just saying
that. What was that?
Yeah.
It was on
stuff's all on the web.
NFIP. Yeah, it was on one of the websites. It's guidance in determining substantial improvements, and they do talk about appraisers and things like that.
Well, and with the substantial improvements, you have to also give a cost of the improvements, you know, materials, labor, everything.
Yeah.
You know, you can't say I have a volunteer coming in doing this, or my brother's charging, you know, $5 an hour.
I got a question on the violation section.
We're not there yet.
No. Where are we then?
Well, we're back at substantial damage.
Okay.
So that's what FEMA says, and our current code, Chapter 101 definitions, defines substantial damage as basically as damage of any origin sustained by a structure within a 10-year period, whereby the cost of restoring the structure to its before damage condition equals or exceeds 30% of the market value of the structure.
What'd you say? 30?
30%. That is currently what's in our code and has been there as long as I've been looking at our town code.
Okay, and over here.
And it's 30% over cumulative over a 10-year period.
That's in our current code.
That's in our code.
So what do you suggest?
So I'm suggesting that we add the clarifier within a 10-year period and change 50% to 30%.
I don't know that. Why do we want to make it more difficult?
We're making it what it currently is. It currently is and has been for a long period of time. I mean, it's been 15 years at least, maybe 22 years. It's been 30%. Well, no, we actually know when that was modified.
So we're going to become more restrictive than the FEMA guidelines.
We currently are.
I know.
And we are going to stay. I mean, I think we should stay more restrictive.
And the rationale?
The rationale for me, there are two. One is that this is where we are currently, and I don't feel that I have any good reason to change that. And the second is that we have so many properties that are at risk of flooding. This is, to some extent, the substantial damage and substantial improvement requirements are to bring the community as a whole up to a higher level of flood loss prevention safety.
Is this just for residential properties? Is that what we're considering?
This is all properties. Our definition currently, since 1999, has been 30% over a 10-year period.
I personally think going through with the FEMA guidelines make 50%. Any way you look at it, it's going to cost property owners money. And I think we should be a little bit more accommodating than saying if you got 30%, in 10 years, now you've got to rebuild the place and come up with code.
Well, it doesn't say you have to rebuild the place. It says you have to elevate it.
Well, okay, you have to elevate. And if you have to elevate,
that's like can be rebuilt.
You get into the setback issues and everything else. I just don't see the need for it.
So you would change you would make what I see as a substantive change to the town code.
Yes.
That's going to harm the town's standing in the community rating system.
Well, I believe FEMA has probably given us some thought to come up with the 50%. I don't think they just arbitrarily came up with a number.
Mike?
Greater Bonds than ours have worked on.
So where do you sit on this?
I'm with the 50%. Whatever FEMA's coming up with, I see the 30. I've got the old code right in front of me. It's 30%, and I see where FEMA wants us to go to 50. And I'm saying, overall for the town, I would go with what the direction FEMA's going.
Marty,
me too. I agree with the 50%.
Jim,
I also.
Mike,
I'm always complicated. the town has 3 or 4 different zones now, and each of these zones present a different risk of flooding and damage to the properties, starting with the least possible damage in the AO2 zone up to the VE13 zone on the ocean. I'm going to vote one way or the other, but I'm just getting my thoughts out. To give a blanket definition in each one of these zones could be a hardship for somebody in an AO2 zone, because our concentration, our focus has been on raising houses, but there's other ways to prevent damage from a flood in some of these zones with flood vents and flood proofing and things like that. We got to think out of the box someday on that. It's all we're thinking about now is raise, and a lot of people in a lot of different places are flood proofing and making the structure sounder and things like that instead of raising it, because I can't for whatever reasons. I know we don't have the time or the energy to look into each flood zone and say, okay, should it be 30% here, 50% there, but that's almost a logical thing to do. But I know we're not going to do that, so I would say go with 50%.
50%.
And I would go with 30% over a 10-year period.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you were just overwritten, weren't you?
Well.
I'm just checking on that.
Well, right.
Just want to make sure you understand we didn't agree with you on that.
Right. Well, my finger might slip on the key the next time. So would 30% one time be compromised?
No.
No. Okay, so then you would like to keep the FEMA language. You'd keep 50% on substantial improvement,
yes.
Even if this costs everybody in town 5% on their flood insurance.
It's
a
trade-off.
Yeah.
Okay.
Trade-off. 30% one time. It's only going to happen one time in anybody's lifetime.
Yeah.
Yes.
We hope.
I'm sorry. What's only going to happen one time?
But we have the damage of 30% is the one. You said that was a one-time deal, and then after that you get the 50% FEMA. What was the one-time?
There's who knows what the cost to the town may be in a downrating in scoring of the CRS, which if that happens could cost everybody in town who buys flood insurance 5% off their flood insurance annually, but.
We could ask that question. I mean, I don't know if that actually.
Well, I mean, Chuck said that wouldn't affect his thinking one way or the other.
Yeah. Well, Chuck's just one guy.
Well.
I just don't buy into the insurance companies controlling this world and ways they always do.
Well, here, Chuck, what's happening? The question would be. Yeah. To that lady who's run the CRS, and they're very informative, very quick.
I mean, I would ask that question only if the answer is going to change anybody's.
It would change my answer, because if it's going to save our insurance rates, because if the 30% gets you a lower insurance rate town-wide, I think I would change my answer because of that. because it affects the whole town.
Okay, I will ask.
Change my answer. I think, I mean, 5% on reduction is, I mean, I think that you don't be sarcastic, but you can get that at a coupon Safeway, 5%.
Right. But, okay.
The lady who's running CRS, she's very...
I can ask her. She'll, you know, she can tell.
And so I think we're done with it, but stick with 50 if she says.
Page 13.
I had a question, David. You skipped over it. The violation of this section.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
What is the is that go back to the $25? What's the violation? You violate, but what's the penalty? Is that a rhetorical question here?
That is, later in this, in section 8, we point to a new chapter 80, section 14 or something, where the...
Is that the one we talked about,
The
$500? Because right now, it'd be $25 in our town code.
Well, but that's going to be...
Okay, that's where I was going.
Fine. That all disappears.
Okay.
So on page 13, anybody before page 13? 3.3b, the recommendation from FEMA was to change compliance to conformance. That has to do with conforming and non-conforming. That's what FEMA says. I don't see any reason to. Page 16, anything before 16? Mike Harmer owes us homework on page 16.
Yes.
I'm on page 19.
Can we go back to 14 real quick?
Sure.
Where application contents start. We did insert on number 1, A1, site plans prepared by a registered professional land surveyor or registered professional engineer. For one, is that... to be assumed that as we go down to 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, when we're asking for drawings and diagrams.
Do you want that language?
I don't know. I'm just asking you. Is it clear to you that...
It's better to be clear.
I'd make it clear. I mean, it's not clear to me. If you listed in 1 and you don't list it in 5, that means I might be able to get away with,
So which sections, Mike? 5?
A1... requires a registered engineer.
So you
want
to add that to either 5?
Either that, add it to...
you do a footnote to each section.
Yes.
So you don't have to put it down every time.
If you don't have to put it down every time.
7, 8.
I'm sorry, 5, 7, 8.
7, 8. Where the placement films prepared by manufacturing sources of films with the back. 9, definitely. Compaction specifications.
So what about 12, where it calls for an appropriate design professional? Is that is that clear enough, or do you want to say... it says appropriate, so it's not going to be a landscape designer.
I mean, we would hope not.
Because that wouldn't be appropriate. Okay. And if I look at this and think someplace else is appropriate, I'll add it.
Okay.
As well in that list. Page 16, 17, 18... 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30. 31, and that gets us to the end, with the exception of we need to address this. I would like to readdress this issue of freeboard.
Well, we'll have to because
David,
it's in,
I got a
it's
question.
In a lot of these.
For number page 23 under elevation, we're listing 18/12.
Right, that's the freeboard question.
And so we haven't addressed that.
We're going to address it right now. We have discussed Mike Taraskevich's 3-2-1 proposal. We have discussed staying where we are at 1. We've discussed going higher, 18 inches, 24 inches. Based on looking at the changes in the flood zones and how many of the properties are going to be, would be marginally impacted. Many properties will be marginally impacted by increasing the freeboard to 2 feet, given the changes in the flood levels. I would like to see us either go from 1 foot to 18 inches or possibly to 18 inches in an AE zone and 2 feet in an AO zone. I'm sorry, in a VE zone. I mean, I clearly would like 2 feet in an AE and 3 feet in a VE, but I'm looking to see if there would be support for 18 inches, going from 12 inches to 18 inches in an AE zone and 12 inches to 2 feet in an VE zone.
Okay, and for those, this gets me into the 35-foot discussion, for those properties that are already at the 35 feet in an AE zone, and they want to be proactive and raise their property, where do we go with that to meet the FEMA standards where they don't meet the FEMA standards right now?
Well, and then you have people like, you know,
like who? Kevin?
Yeah, like Kevin.
Okay.
Who wants to go, he doesn't want to go a foot. He wants to go 3 feet. And
well,
that's...
What would be the... Yeah, but how, regardless, whether it's 1 foot, 2 foot, 3 feet...
That's an issue we're going to... That's an issue to discuss in the future.
I can't... Well, I'm just telling you, I have a hard time discussing freeboard now without considering what this means to people that are already at the 35-foot level. I mean, how do you do that? We're going to have to come back.
I'm definitely with Jen, right? You know, so I could probably leave it right there. But you know, I'm thinking that there's a way that somebody right now would be able to build a 35 and get three stories, et cetera, et cetera, mm-hmm. and then we squeeze them by a foot or two, and they might not be able to do exactly what they're trying to do. I don't think we've thought it out. I like the 1-2-3 rule. We talked about it last time. I'm on board with it. But if we can't do anything with the height in town without a referendum, I think we've got to do the referendum first and then go back and adjust, I think.
And I certainly agree. I think one reflects upon the other. Yeah. I think we need to look at the overall height. Therefore, right now, I think we'll leave this one. If we're currently at 1 foot, I think we'll leave it at 1 foot. And go forward and see if we can see if the town people want to allow the building height to go up. And then we can try to play games with, just turn the words out, play games with the freeboard and with the FEMA requirements. But I don't think we can do it until the other is clarified one way or the other.
Do we know if they'll ever be brought up again in a referendum?
Well, depends on where we go with this, because if we can add a footnote, to, you know, we can keep the freeboard exactly the way it is right now, and add to that there are some considerations to going to the 1, 2, and 3, depending on which zone. But the issue of the 35 feet has got to be looked at, and are we going to recommend that somebody who does not need it currently or has an existing structure that wants to become proactive can go, or you know, can start at that freeboard level measuring the 35 feet? I mean,
so Don, where are you on this discussion?
looking like a cork floating on the sea of life.
I have just a comment. You know, the FEMA thing is just, I mean, the lines, the ISO bar lines or whatever they are, I mean, they only change a little bit. And these are just bare minimums for insurance purposes. So I know you all have kept that in mind. But, you know, when and Sandy wasn't even the big one. I don't, you know, I think we got off easy on that one. But it just goes to show you, I mean, you know, 6 inches here, you know, that's not going to, you know, when the big one does come, you know, it's probably going to be more than just a couple inches and that kind of thing. So just remember, I think that, and FEMA, everything I've ever read, contrary to them lowering the lines and the zones and that kind of thing, they go on to say that the higher you can go, the better. But that they recommend these standards as bare minimums.
So I need we think we need a referendum.
You have to have a referendum.
And nobody wants to, I don't see any ball rolling on that. And that needs to happen. You know, I mean.
Well, three of the people are for re-election have, I believe, said that protecting people from sea level rise is one of their top 6 or 7
see
criteria,
that?
But
you
know,
Mark,
that's
1 foot.
The,
so they get their insurance bill.
South Bethany has a 32-foot height restriction. I think that's what George Bunny told me. He's one of the commissioners, and they're looking at, and they're going to. He said they're going to probably make a recommendation there that they start the height measurement at the FEMA level.
Well, so, they might do that too.
And this way, it would be. It would deal with their, but they're going to probably increase their height limit anyway to 35, they're thinking, from the FEMA level.
And as a, you know, as a planner looking long term, I would like to see us move in a direction of increasing the freeboard. You know, even if it's only 6 inches to 18 inches at this point, I think it sends a signal. It shows Denrec, it shows FEMA, it shows the people in town that we are being proactive. I mean, I believe sea level rise is coming, and it's we're going to have to do a lot more. I mean, Chuck, I know you don't think sea level is coming, and
well, I can watch the sea level come up the yard almost daylight. We had full moons this past week, you know.
I'm for the 3-2-1, and I'll tell you why, Chuck. Because I mean, unfortunately, people in the VE zone along the bay and the ocean will have to elevate their houses higher. The freeboard is nothing but a safety factor. It's a scientific wild guess, you know, guess. That's all it is. Most towns and counties have continued to raise it. I don't necessarily want to follow the pattern, but the reason I'm thinking is because if you're living in that VE zone, like you said, you've got a 4-foot wave, you know, it's best to be up or on the ocean. And that, not to penalize those few people, but that would restrict, or that would limit a whole lot of fewer people to, you know, having to raise their freeboard. It's just the people in the VE zone. And then you get the 2-foot freeboard in the AE zone. You know, there's a substantial amount of people there, but that would benefit everybody's insurance rate, but it would also give you an increased factor of safety. And I don't know how many houses are going to be raised up to 35 feet or more. No one really knows that. Then you go to the AO zone, which is just sheet flooding. That freeboard would be a foot. That covers a whole lot of town, but that would be just a foot. Because most damage you would get in a sheet flood would be drywall, carpeting, things like that, not going to structures. I wish we had time to add into this regulation that if they wanted to build their house to a stronger standard to resist flooding, then they wouldn't have to go to the 3-foot freeboard or the 2-foot. They could stay at a 1-foot freeboard. In other words, you know, they're going to have a freeboard, but they're also going to build their house to a stronger standard flood proofing. You know, that would be a nice insert to put in the freeboard definition, because just raising a house doesn't mean you're protecting it from a flood. It has to be built properly and vented and things like that. And we don't even talk about that, unfortunately. But until we get to that point, I think we should go to a 3-2-1.
And I'm on board with a 3-2-1. as long as that roof height
follows suit.
Follows suit, yes.
Well, that would have to go to the Board of Adjustment.
Hopefully,
it's
got to
go to referendum.
Well, that's
got to go to referendum.
So, yeah, there's no way.
It's got to go to referendum. We've known that for, you know, 2 months and all the time.
It would be nice.
So would any, would anybody here go to flat freeboard in the AE and BE of 18 inches?
I don't think we ought to change it.
No. Okay.
Until we get the answer to this other question.
Jim, Mike, don't change it.
I agree with Chuck.
Okay.
I think if it's going to give, I don't know if it's going to give us a deduction or insurance, and it would be worth looking at changing it.
But they could go to referendum. My point is, go to referendum. Nobody's going to do it. It's just going to, everybody's going to forget it.
No, I mean, he's talking about the CRS rating.
CRS rating? They're not,
you know which gives.
You do 4, you're going to get 60%. You do 2 or whatever. We've got the percentages all in front of us. We know what we're talking about. It needs to be go to referendum. So we don't punish the people that are already, you know, up there in the 34 range, and people who right now enjoy the benefit of going to 35 without having a 2, 3, 4 foot freeboard. I'm going to go to 4 foot freeboard with a referendum.
And if things can get changed.
You need 3, 2, 1.
I think once we make the recommendation, I think we should make the recommendation that the town consider going to referendum for the following reasons. As part of our plan, but until it does that, I'm with Chuck and Mark.
I mean, I like the idea that you're presenting that definitely is that.
Well, we're
I'm sorry,
the
manual
community in Seabreeze, where I've got a 22.5 foot high, and we're talking about bringing it up for those people in the flood zones and measuring at the FEMA level.
Okay, so I think I get it.
Good.
I'm passing out a draft of a work schedule for us through January, and so we have basically finished the Rodney Avenue rezoning question, so the possible hearing in mid-October won't happen. If you look at the bottom, there's kind of an estimated time for each of these issues, and they get to be some pretty long meetings, and I don't know whether or not we could maybe plan on 2 meetings in October.
Well, I'm going to be out 14th through the 20th, won't be back till the 20th, well, late to the 23rd, the 24th. I'll be in Europe.
I mean, I think November would be most appropriate for 2 meetings.
So the other issue is the town commissioners are going to start meeting on Saturdays again, and Jim, do you think that they're going to continue to have short meetings, or do you think... So we might want to get away from the town commissioner meetings. So the third Saturday in October is the 18th, maybe 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, I won't be here, but that's fine.
And then maybe we could do the... Could we
No.
Chris, you're just tired of working on weekends, aren't you?
So how about so October 18th, weeknight. What about November 7th in the evening? Say, that's a Friday. Say, 7?
Friday night at 7 o'clock?
Yeah.
What is that Friday?
Yeah, I mean, Chris wanted a weeknight.
Going to midnight.
Oh, whatever.
You know, I'll try and keep the meeting to 2.5 hours or something.
Yeah,
I mean...
6? I mean... 10 o'clock is right.
Who
the hell?
You want to, you know, it's just if people are going to come from out of town, then I think we need to provide the accommodation for them to.
I know what a weekend. I know what a meeting probably is. I just think so. I'm just kidding.
What about the 22nd of November at 10 a.m.? That's a Saturday. And
what's that with Thanksgiving, the 22nd?
Thanksgiving is the 27th.
Okay.
So that's a weekend before Thanksgiving. And
did you say November 7th?
Is that November 7th at 7 p.m. That's a Friday. And November 22nd at 10 a.m., that's a Saturday.
Are you talking about two meetings in November?
Yeah. And I'm open to December 6th or December 20.
December what?
6th or 20.
I would say
6
if
not on the 20th.
Yeah.
Okay, December 6th, that's a Saturday. Say 10 a.m. again. And January 17th, how about that? 10 a.m.
January what?
17. And I'll send that out. I'll redo the schedule. That's basically what I see as for what we have on our plate and trying to schedule, you know, a reasonable workflow and schedule and any other business comments, commissioner comments, public comments? Is there a motion?
Yes, I motion that we adjourn for today.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.